I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today I have in the studio, sitting right next to me, Hal Marcus. And if you are from El Paso, or if you are a lover of art in general, you know this name. Hal Marcus is a native-born El Pasan. He has been painting for 40 years, and some of the most iconic images of El Paso and Juarez were created by this man. For example, Mercado Juarez, which is this really beautiful, colorful image of Mercado right here in Ciudad Juarez. His studio, where he paints daily, is right here near UTEP. Hal, you are just, I would say, one of the most important artists that ever came out of our region. And when I ran into you the other day, we started talking, I thought, you write books, you write children's books, you have a beautiful art book. There's one right in front of me right now. It's called Hal Marcus Art and Times, written by Monica Gomez,
right.
Is no stranger to El Paso Radio. Right. So, Hal, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad I bumped into you. This is a real honor and a real privilege to be sitting here. We have some time to just really get into it. I was looking at your website, and you had some words that I didn't know, like Kafka and Koan. Is that the word? Or K-O-A-N?
I think it's pronounced Kwan.
Oh, Kwan. I was looking those words up. I said, whoa. And I said, wow, I've never heard of those words before, but it's right up my alley.
Well, Kafka, of course, is the great writer Franz Kafka. And a Kwan is a Buddhist Zen story that both teaches and doesn't teach at the same time.
And I like the mysticism aspect of your writing and just of who you are. So it's a real honor because we really never have sat down and talked to each other. I've heard about you. You've heard about me. So it's going to be interesting, our conversation.
And I think we probably ran into each other at cocktail parties here and there, but we never really got a chance to talk. And I've never taken the opportunity to really go into your work and into your biography, and doing so, just really fascinated by not only your life, but your perspective, your work. And you mentioned mysticism. The other day I was visiting your gallery. A really beautiful event was going on there, and your paintings were everywhere. And I was struck by one called Torah in Glass. I just thought it was incredibly beautiful. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But also I noticed, and I mentioned this to you, a little Chagall influence there.
Of course.
And I noticed you have a lot of mystical images and mystical symbolism in your work. So you're obviously not a stranger to probably Kabbalah, perhaps.
Really
beautiful images. Well, let's get started with a little bit about your background. I know you are from Jewish Arabic ancestry, which I think is perfect, right?
Right.
And your parents came through Alice Island.
Right. They came from Aleppo, Syria.
Wow.
My father came with my grandma. In 1921, he was only 6 months old. My grandma was nursing two children and also had another child. And they came through Ellis Island, and then they came directly to El Paso in 1921. They moved into Chihuahuita. They knew no English at all, had like about, you know, $20 in their pocket. Like many immigrants, you know, from many different cultures.
Chihuahuita, a little neighborhood here in El Paso, right? Urban.
Yes, and they would go back and forth to Juarez, you know, daily. And as I was growing up, my grandma would take me to Juarez daily. And that's how I came up with the Mercado Juarez, the Avenida Juarez, in that culture. But as I got to be older, I was very blessed and lucky in Coronado High School. I had a beautiful teacher. Her name was Isela Fulton, and she inspired in me the passion to become an artist.
Is that the same Isela Fulton who writes fiction and studies
her daughter?
That's her daughter.
Her daughter.
Oh, okay.
They're both called Isela Fulton. So Isela Fulton, that you know, the writer, her mother discovered me when I was like 15 years old, and it was because of her guidance or inspiration or encouragement, because I came from a home that had no art in it, no music, no literature. All I knew was my Jewish heritage and my Arabic cooking, and a grandmother who was passionate about food, and a father who owned a grocery store, and my whole family worked in a grocery store. So when I told them when I was about 15 or 16 I wanted to be an artist, they thought that was ridiculous. they thought I would outgrow it, you know? And because I'm basically, after that, after high school, I was self-taught.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting that you grew up in a family without art, yet at the same time, your family owned a grocery store, and your grandmother used to take you to Juarez a lot. So even though you weren't around art, you were around a lot of color. And a lot of shapes and smells, and that must have contributed to your development.
Definitely. Even now, people say, did you use like a cadmium red in that painting? I said, I don't know.
Maybe.
It looked like a tomato. You know, that's all I know. Food and colors just go together. Lime, green, you know, yellow, banana, you know. So being self-taught, it's wonderful because you don't have to break any rules because you were never taught any rules.
Right.
And so Yeah, I had a very interesting upbringing, and I've been blessed. You know, people say when they look at my work that I'm real talented. I said, you know, it's 10% talent and 90% hard work.
Oh, isn't it always? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Didn't Picasso say something like that?
Yeah, well, you know, so I'm passionate about what I do. Every day I wake up, I feel just so blessed that I'm able to do what I'm doing for a living. And also, I mentor lots of other artists. In my gallery, in the past 25 years, we've exhibited over 500 local artists. So, you know, it's not only about being an artist, it's just living it and sharing it and mentoring. Because our community, as you very well know, is like one of the most beautiful in the world. And I just feel so honored that I'm able to do what I'm doing. And it affects my community.
You know, you are one of the only artists that I know who makes a living as an artist. And that's incredible.
Well, a lot of that is because growing up in the grocery store business, being in the Jewish, Arabic, merchant type of things, you know, if you know how to buy and sell, if you know how to pay your bills, if you know how to collect from people who owe you money, you know, being a merchant. Now, this is not only good for art, but you can sell insurance, you can sell cars, you can sell shoes.
Or writing.
You can sell your writing. You're right. You know, I know how much I have into it. I know how much I need to get out of it. And it didn't happen overnight, but I am a merchant and I am an artist. People say I use the right and left side of my brains, you know. Maybe I do, but I had a father who was very dominant and he knew how to make money, you know. So it's the same as you buy an apple for a nickel and sell it for a dime. You know, I just applied it to my art. The most important part of what I do is, first of all, I have a good product. But second of all, I make customers for life. I know how to communicate with people and have that personal relationship, especially with El Paso, because, you know, I run into people I went to school in kindergarten. They knew my grandma and my grandma knew them.
Wow. You went to Mesita Elementary, which is still there. Yeah.
I went to Mesita. I went to Coronado. My children all went to El Paso High. And so it's a beautiful community. And, and every day I realize how fortunate we are to live here, you know, on the frontera.
You know, not only are you, I'm sure, very savvy as a merchant, but a part of that, I would assume, I've been watching this show called Alpha House. I don't know if you watched it. It's on Amazon Prime, and it's about these four senators living in an apartment together. And it's pretty funny, but one of them has ambitions to run for president, and he meets with this very high-profile promotion guy, and the guy says, you know what, you have no chance because you don't promote other senators. You need to get out there and promote other senators. And that makes sense when it comes to the art world, too. You probably more than or as much as anybody in this region promote local artists.
Well, my philosophy is to become a success, you have to make everybody around you a success.
That's beautiful.
That's my philosophy. When I opened up my first art gallery back in like 1990, I was working with my daughter, Lelania, and I was just carrying my work. And after about 3 months, she came up to me and says, Daddy, people are getting bored of looking at your work.
That's great.
I was shattered or hurt my feelings. She said, Dad, she was taking art classes here at UTEP. She said, let me get some of my student friends. And I said, sure, go ahead, Layla, do whatever you want. You know, what am I, like chopped liver? So she had an exhibit and she invited 20 students from UTEP. And lo and behold, I sold their artwork and my artwork because people came who weren't looking for my artwork and liked my artwork. That's when a light bulb went off in my brain saying, of course, look for artists and show as many artists as you can. It'll help me and them, and then it'll spread like wildfire. So, yes, I do try to make everybody I come in contact with a success. I help them, and they help me.
Yeah, especially if you believe in their work. And I know there are certain artists whose work you deeply believe in.
Right. And, you know, people ask me all the time.
Like who? Give me some.
Well, people ask me all the time, Daniel, that if I judge their art show at their elementary school or high school or even college. And I said, I don't believe in competitions in art. I don't believe in judging art. Who am I to say what's good and what's bad? Every artist is a winner.
Right.
You know, so because of that, I don't judge art. I know what I like. I know what I'd like to put in my home. I know who I'd like to represent. But I'm not like a judge. But all the artists that we carry in the gallery, like Mauricio Mora and Francisco Romero and Daniel Padilla and Carmen Navarre, and I mean, the list goes on and on of local artists. And we also carry early El Paso art like Tom Lee, Manuel Acosta, Rudy Montoya, Eugene Thurston. So I become an expert on what we call early Texas, early El Paso art. And we're the only gallery in town that deals in early art. The important part there is you're preserving the visual history of our community. And that it's history. I mean, it's very important. And, right. and we're really the only ones doing it. Of course, the El Paso Museum of Art. But they're, you know, a right. city-owned institution.
This is something that writers, we have a lot of writers that listen to this show, really should probably keep in mind. Today, some of the most successful young writers out there, I'm talking people like Rigoberto Gonzalez, Eduardo Corral, are writers who promote other writers.
Right.
I mean, they love writing so much that when they find something they love, they share it with. And I really admire the fact that you do that with artists, that yeah. an artist can find a friend in you.
Yeah, it's important for me because it keeps me on my toes of what's happening. There's a group of artists in El Paso called Los Visionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And there was about six or seven guys that went to Mexico City, and they went on top of the pyramids, and they had a vision to come back to El Paso and become visionaries.
Nice.
And most of them are in their 30s, you know,
uh-huh.
like Diego Robot Martinez. He's famous for doing his little robots. And some of these guys like Rick Inc. Uribe, who won the Skin Wars on national TV about a year ago. And many others, young people. And it keeps me kind of knowing what's going on in the community because I'm 67 years old. I'm an elder now. I'm old school, you know. So, you know.
You look like you're in great shape and you look younger. Do you exercise?
I exercise. I'm a vegan. You know, do Qigong. I eat good. I'm blessed. I haven't been sick one day in 10 years.
Wow.
You know?
Let's talk about one of your most famous pieces I mentioned earlier, Avenida Juarez. And I urge you listeners to Google it right now, Avenida Juarez, Hal Marcus, to see this incredibly beautiful painting. This is one of the paintings that really most identifies not only El Paso, but one of the paintings we think of when
right.
we think of Hal Marcus. Tell us how this painting came about.
Well, when I was a young boy, I'm talking 5, 6, 7 years old, my grandma would take me to Juarez, and she knew the people who had the little curio leather shops, mm-hmm. you know, and she would go in there, and they would smoke a cigarette, and they would talk, and they would gossip, and then she'd get her nails done. And I was just a 5, 6-year-old kid. And she would go in and out of bars, actually, uh-huh. and meet people and do things. And we'd get to buy some tortillas and go to the market. So Avenida Juarez was always a place where there's always something happening.
Right.
And then as I became older, like a teenager, you know, we go in there and drink and,
right.
visit, you know, the night spots and stuff like that. So Juarez was an integral part of my growing up. So I did two paintings that put me on the map. One was the Mercado Juarez that mm-hmm. I worked on for 8 years.
8 years.
Eight
my
years.
God.
And I had gone to Europe. I had visited, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, the Picassos. You know, for a year, I traveled around Europe with my. I got married when I was 19 out mm-hmm. of high school. We sold everything and went to Europe. When I came back, I wanted to paint the greatest painting ever. I'm talking like The Last Supper by Leonardo da Vinci.
Absolutely.
I know it sounds ridiculous.
No, it doesn't.
It sounds ridiculous.
It sounds like an artist.
It sounds like, you know, I've been there, I've done that, I want to try to do something, you know, real. So I thought, what is the most real thing that I could do? And there are two paintings I came up with. One was the Mercado Juarez, because mm-hmm. it had all the fruits and vegetables that I would eat, and I worked on it for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I put that on a calendar, I put it on postcards. I'm talking, I was like 25 years old. I went door to door, you know, I sold the calendars for $5, the cards for $1. And then people say, what's next? And then I thought, well, Avenida Juarez.
Right. Which is another amazing painting.
Yeah,
please Google that.
Street that just goes down Avenida. It's a one-way street. You can get married there. You can get divorced there. You can get your teeth cleaned. You know, you can get the licuados. You can go into Martino's and the Florida, into the bars. You can find prostitutes. You can find whatever
you can,
it is.
You can buy a single cigarette if you want. You don't have to buy a pack.
And it all leads to the bridge and to right. the other country, El Norte, you know? So I said, I'm going to do that. So I tried to put everything. I'm in the back of the taxi. Uh-huh. There's a taxi going down the street. Me and my kids, my family's in the back of the taxi. And, you know, so these are scenes that I grew up with that helped me be who I am.
Right.
And so I put it in a painting. The Mercado Juarez now hangs at the Children's Hospital on Alameda. And it's on a 20-year loan there to the county or to the Children's Hospital. And the Avenida Juarez I sold to Stewart Title Company, and it's down here on Mesa and Franklin for people to go see. But that kind of put me on the map.
Right, absolutely. And the Mercado Juarez that is on a 20-year loan. How many more years do they have?
They probably have like about 14.
Can we have it up next? The Department of Creative Writing. Can the Department of Creative Writing have one of your paintings on loan?
Well, you know, now I have works in about 25 different public buildings. Right. In at the UTEP library here, downstairs, I have several big, large murals. And I have the county courthouse. Right. I mean, I have them all over town.
You said it took you 8 years to paint Mercado Juarez. And I could relate as a novelist because I've never written anything in less than 5 years.
Oh, wow.
You know? And usually it takes a lot longer, so I can totally relate. But one of the questions that I ask writers, because for writers, what is often more important even than the product is the process itself. And I always ask writers, tell us about your process, how you start from the conception to the final product.
Well, there's two different things. One is like if you're talking about the Mercado Juarez, that's one thing. And then one is like the paintings that I'm doing now. But I did talk a little bit about why I wanted to do Mercado, especially because of the way the fruits and vegetables tasted, the experience. So it's picking the theme, you know, so the theme that is something you can do wholeheartedly, you know. And then you take some photographs, you know, you go down there and you start taking photographs. And I'm talking about, you know, what do 100 jalapenos look like? You know,
right.
Are they red? Are they green? Are some of them red and green? Do some of them have orange in them? Are the stems looking up? I mean.
And how many kinds of green are there?
And how many kinds of green, you know? So, I mean, in that particular thing, I went back and forth to the Juarez market maybe 100 times taking photographs and getting into it. And then, you know, once you realize what you want to do, then you stretch your canvas, you know, and you start doing the drawing. Well, the drawing for that one took about a year and a half.
Wow.
And then things kept changing. There's actually a video on HalMarcus.com, a website where you can see the 15-minute video of the whole making of the Mercado Juarez. And so anyway, and then and at certain times, this was a time when I was starting to have children, I started to have a family. I wasn't making any money for my art. So, you know, I had to get other jobs to make a living. So I would bring in friends and artists to help me paint the painting while I was out trying to make a living. So it became a community project.
Nice.
So I have never taken that long on a painting except for that one.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a lot to do with my lifestyle at the time that I couldn't just sit there and paint all day. Now I can. But normally, the paintings I do now take me about 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow.
And I'll also start off with a drawing. I'll start off with a theme. My major themes are El Paso Juarez, women. Most of my things now are all women. And then harlequins, being street performers or circus performers, mainly because I had a band. I was a percussionist in a gypsy band. Most of my friends are actually musicians. And my children are all in California. They're all performance artists.
Mm-hmm.
So they send me photographs of their snake charming, of their belly dancing,
wow.
of their fire, their swords. And they have an entertainment company out of Los Angeles, Hollywood, and San Diego.
Mm.
They were all born and raised here in El Paso. So they're sending me all these photographs of things that they're doing. And for me, you know, I am a harlequin, and you are a harlequin. We're kind of animated people who go through this life trying to show everyone else the magic of living. Of the miracle
of
living.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. That's beautiful.
So we are street performers. I'm street performing right now in this room with you. I mean, I'm interacting with you. We're going out in the airwaves of the magic of an artist and how it influences the community. So, you know, I do the harlequins, I do the El Paso Juarez stuff, and I do women, mostly because I think women are the most beautiful thing on the planet. And I always show them with grace and eloquence and the mysticism of their nurturing spirit. Mm.
Right. I'm in the studio with Hal Marcus, artist and writer, Hal Marcus. In your book, Hal Marcus Art and Times, which is available on your website, halmarcus.com. It's a beautiful book, by the way. It's got a lot of wonderful photos and chronicles your journey as an artist. But you quote Chagall, and the quote is, "Color is all. When color is right, form is right." I love that quote, and it makes me think of the poet, and I make little distinction between the poet and the fiction writer, but for the poet, it could be rhythm, language, the music of language will lead a poet into the form, and the form will be created by the language. And what Chagall seems to be saying here is that the color can lead you into the form and into the meaning of the piece. Do you find that's true with your own work, that you just like might just have this concept of color and then just follow it into a painting?
You know, it all kind of falls into place simultaneously. I can't say that color is the main thing. I can't say that composition is the main thing. I can't say that the theme of the painting's main thing. I think that it just intuitively and instinctually comes together. And the whole thing about being an artist or being a writer, I believe, is being able to listen to that voice that says blue, you know, says green,
right,
or says, that's good. How you really did good, something good here. Oh, let's put in a little bit more black. Let's change that
that's
guy's nose into a bird. Whoa, wouldn't that be cool to change that guy's nose into a bird? The thing is that you have to have a space where you can listen to the voices.
Nice. Uh-huh.
The voices, I don't know where they come from. Maybe they come from artists in the past. Maybe they come from my dreams. Maybe they just come from the sky, from God. You know, I don't know. But listening to the voice, the color, the shape, and the theme, everything will happen. It's not an intellectual process. It's just being open to the voices. And these voices have guided me now for 40, 50 years. And it tells me, you know, do it big, do it small, take that out, get rid of it. You don't need that, you know. It's listening to these voices. And after a while, you trust them. They can help you from not getting in trouble.
Right.
You use it throughout your whole life. You know, you go somewhere and you feel a bad vibe, you go the other way. I mean, the voices are very important. If you don't hear the voices, you can get lost.
If you don't hear the voices, you can get lost. I completely agree when it comes to writing poetry and fiction as well. Sometimes you just make choices and you don't know why you're doing it, but you just know that that's the way to go because the voice tells you. That's beautiful. When you were in high school and you had that incredible teacher who was so important to you, Isela Fulton, one day you were drawing, I guess, on your desk, and she came up to you and she says, "You're breaking the rules of composition." And it kind of reminded me when I was first started writing, my very first writing teacher said to me, "You're an experimentalist, Dan Chacon." And I didn't know what that experimentalist was. I didn't know I was breaking rules. Can you talk about that experience?
Well, that's the great thing about being self-taught. You know, I don't have any degrees from any schools or any colleges or anything like that. So I didn't know what the word composition meant. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what there was a rule. I would put like a circle just almost right in the middle of a paper. And she said, "You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to put it to the right or to the left."
Right.
So, you know, the thing is that I don't break any rules because I don't have any rules.
Right.
Of course, it becomes a problem, like with my wife and my kids and my family.
You need structure somewhere.
And somewhere, because I'm just kind of like a kite. You know, you put it up in the sky and it goes where it wants to. Right. You have a string holding onto it, but, you know, it can turn flips and do all kinds of stuff. So you trust your instincts, you know. The great thing about her is that she had a passion for art, and she instilled it in me. She exposed me to lots of artists, and she gave me the supplies to be free with. And I've taught art, you know, I've taught art classes, and basically I'm there for them. You know, I'll give them whatever they want. They pick my brain and stuff, but it's all about what they're doing. I don't want them to paint like me. By the way, I did take a course here at college when I was a freshman, and I got an F in painting.
An F, wow.
I got an F.
You know, you're like Matisse. He wasn't accepted into the L'École des Beaux-Arts, right?
I got an F in painting. That's all I needed to know. I said, I'm out of here.
Speaking of Matisse, there seems to be, and I may be overplaying it a bit by putting it this strongly, but there seems to be three artists who have influenced you or have at least become significant to you in your development, and that is Picasso, Chagall, and Matisse. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what they mean to you.
Well, one thing that was great about all these guys is that they lived during the same time I lived, you know? So they're not like Leonardo da Vinci or something.
Right.
I was able to see some of their work while they were doing it.
Wow.
You know? And they are the fathers of modern art. You know, when I do a line right now, because the best things I do, Danny, are lines.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll do a line, I'll do a one-minute thing, and Matisse will be jealous. That's how close I am.
I am with it.
Matisse.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally love it.
I'm dead, you're alive, and that was a good line.
Yeah.
So they're a part of my life. Also Modigliani, you know, and they're a part of my life.
I love that Matisse gets jealous. I have that same feeling sometimes, and I don't admit this a lot, but since you're admitting it, sometimes I'll be writing and I'll think, you know, oh, Borges stole that from me. He stole that line from me.
Right. Well, it's
or wants to.
Because they are our comrades. I mean,
right,
they are mentors. They are our friends. You know, they died, but they're still here.
Right.
And that's what I want to do. My teacher taught me that Rembrandt was immortal. I wanted to be immortal. I mean, you know, it's okay to say it on air.
Right,
maybe I will, maybe I won't.
Sense, right?
But still, I like that thing that whatever we do now goes on forever.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about, I think we're running out of time, so I'm just one more question. I don't know if you can answer this in a minute, but tell me about a typical Hal Marcus day, a typical Hal Marcus creative day?
Well, every day is creative. Basically, you know, I wake up, I take a shower, I do my Qigong, which is like a martial arts meditation. I make my smoothie. I'm a vegan, so I put in everything I can in the refrigerator that makes it really good. And I get up and I go to my studio. I go to my studio about 11:30. I check in with my gallery manager. I have my manager's across the street. I'd say, "What's going on today?" She said, "You got this appointment, you got that appointment." I'd say, "Well, have them come to the studio." Some of them I go over to the gallery. And then I'll paint until noon and I'll take a break. I'll eat my lunch and I'll come back and I'll paint. And sometimes we'll have visitors that come and see me. But I don't wait to be inspired, because every day I'm inspired, really. Right. If I'm sad, I'm inspired. If I'm lonely, I'm inspired. If I feel energetic, I'm inspired. So it's become a habit.
Oh. Well, Hal, this has been a great conversation. I love the parallels between visual art and being a writer. I'm Daniel Chacon. I'd like to thank Hal Marcus. Please check out halmarcus.com, and you can see his paintings, his books, and the artists that he supports. And I'd like to thank Stefania Castro, our producer. I'm Daniel Chacon. We'll see you next week on Words on a Wire.